You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery. National speaker Timmery Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember, helping Gen X through Z answer the call to true feminism and authentic manhood. Chris Mueller is a national speaker, author, father of six, and is currently making a Catholic TV show for families as he travels speaking to over 10,000 people each year. Between Chris having over 18 years experience in Catholic lay ministry and Timmery's holding a master's degree in biblical theology, together they cover the week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery.
Man, Southwest just cannot seem to make it out of the news with more this week. I think just as alarming as the rest.
Yeah, this is probably one of the grossest stories I think we're going to cover on, I hope, on Trending. But apparently there was a flight from Philadelphia on Tuesday from Vegas to Philadelphia, and a woman was sitting next to a guy who pulls out his iPad and begins...
Slowly, the nice little desk starts to go down over his lap.
Yeah. And so then he begins to watch, porn. I mean, I there's really no way to say that gently. He begins to watch porn for the entire flight with no headphones on.
And it continues even worse. He's not only sitting there watching porn, indulging, but he's basically indulging more than you would hope. He is, sorry for young ears, but masturbating right there next to her. And this woman, you know, it's interesting that she speaks up, but it's somewhat confusing at the same time. It's like she's afraid of saying something, but she does at the same time.
You know what's horrifying to me about this story is this is not the first time I've heard about this. This is the first time I've heard about it on the news, but I've had friends who've had this happen to him. I've been on flights where I've seen content that's inappropriate being shown on the flight. This is becoming a new normal where people are so drenched in pornography that they get on a plane and they think they've got a right to watch this stuff in open public. I just can't believe the boldness. Like who are you that you can just watch this in mixed company out in the public and not feel like you're just the most disgusting human being on the planet?
Now, I feel like a lot of us have had stories, friends, family members who have been exposed to this, but I feel like this one might get to the next level because essentially at the end of a 5-hour flight, which by the way, he was indulging the entire time, according to this passenger. She said he gets up, closes up his desk and everything and looks at her and says, "Hope you enjoyed the show." Not only that, Chris, he is handing his dirty napkins to the flight attendant during the show. And I'm sorry to be so vulgar, but you guys, this is how gross it is. And I just don't get where that is okay to anyone. Clearly, he's got an issue. Like, there is some sort of issue there for him that he's willing to do that in public.
Yeah, I think there's an issue for her, too, because she didn't say anything. What the story leads us to believe is that she was just tweeting to Southwest corporate saying, "Oh my gosh, I'm an airplane and this is happening." Guys, sending tweets to the corporate is not the bat phone. It is not the big bat signal in the sky that the stewardesses are going to come sweeping down or remove this out of the... They have no like red phone in the cockpit like, "What's happening? We'll be right on it." No, it doesn't work that way. You actually have to confront negative things around you. You can't just tweet to a corporation and think that's going to change your situation.
Right. I mean, maybe if she gave more context of what flight and so forth with time, a lot of time, they could eventually contact them. But even then, it's hearsay, right? What she should have done is maybe she should have started by saying, "Excuse me, could you please turn that off of your screen?" Right?
Yeah, I don't think I would have said "excuse me."
Okay. Oh, sure. That's fine. I mean, you could have done a whole lot worse. But I mean, you could start by saying something. She clearly said in tweets back and forth with Southwest that she was afraid for her safety. I guess the person to her left was sleeping the entire time. I mean, you're already being totally violated sitting there through that.
No, it's a sexual assault. I mean, that's what this is. Had this happened in the workplace, it'd be workplace harassment. Now, and the fact that he was doing what he was doing, and she says he makes no attempt to cover his person, right? So his member is there out for anyone to see. Now we've got public indecency. This is actually a crime. And so all she needs to do to stop this is reach up and go boom and call the stewardess.
I just can't understand why she didn't even nudge the person. If she's that afraid to say something to him, nudge the person next to you and then say it, maybe even very loudly. I mean, I'm a single woman who travels around by myself. I have been exposed to indecent conduct nearby. I've had to say things to people. And when afraid, you say something very loudly so other people can hear.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm the dad. We were in line for Disneyland a while back, and there was these adults in their 30s just macking on each other, just chewing on each other's faces. Oh. And it was gross. And their hands were traveling. And we're in line for Star Tours at Disneyland. So I'm the dad who goes, "Hey, cut it out." And then they ignored me. And then I was like, "No, seriously, cut it out." And they stopped, right? Like, I think in our culture, we need to reclaim our right to enforce the social contract, right? That there's certain behaviors that don't belong in line for Disneyland or on an airplane or really, in this case, anywhere. But if you're going to engage in this sort of deviant stuff, it, you shouldn't be on a Southwest flight doing it.
Right. And I mean, maybe you are a really shy person. I remember one time very early on, I was in a public library and the person hops on the computer next to me and they start looking at pornography and I was shocked. So I don't know that I necessarily thought to say something out loud, because I'll just say he was a very big and intimidating man and there are a lot of other intimidating people near me. So I just kind of went, and like kept making noises and like shaking my head and making faces. For me, in that context, being young and uncomfortable and this big compared to this big, maybe that was okay. If I were older, I'd probably say something louder. I mean, eventually I just got up and walked away.
Well, and I think it's a difference. Again, a public library, you can walk away. On an airplane, I've got no choice but to sit in this particular seat. There is no way that's going to happen, right? And so again, if you're shy, if you're reserved, if you're listening to this and you're on an airplane and someone's engaging in porn on the airplane, press the call button, man. Someone's breaking the law next to you. They're assaulting you with their viewing habits. They're sexually harassing you. Press the call button. If there's an air marshal on the plane, they have to then deal with that thing, right? You don't have to sit there and take it. And again, I think in our culture, we just need to stop taking it, right? We need to, like, if someone's wearing a shirt with profanity at the mall and you've got young kids, you should be able to say, "Hey, that's inappropriate." Right. And if more of us did, I think we could actually change our culture. But we've become so mamby-pamby about everything, or I'm so worried about my own personal safety. And again, a different story with a small little person like Timmy versus a large strapping man like myself, maybe.
Anyway, that's great.
But anyway,
I'll take it.
Yeah, it's okay. I think calling me strapping is probably more humorous, actually. But again, like, if we're not willing to stand up for decency, then we're not going to have decency in public.
And, you know, I have to say, unfortunately, I think that this is going to become more common, right? I think that I've been in circumstances where I've seen this more often doing pro-life work and pro-marriage work. I remember there was a huge press conference that I was at a couple years ago. And in the middle of the press conference, some people who disagreed with us came out as one of us was speaking and whips his you-know-what out right in front of us, in front of a couple of kids. Well, guess what? We're in the middle of a press conference. We have cameras all around. He's just barely out of camera shot. And so the press conference has to go on. We keep speaking, trying to ignore what's happening. In the meantime, someone's running off, getting the adequate attention to address him.
Right.
So, I mean, again, maybe it's a context where you aren't the person to do something given where you're at, right? It would actually detract from what you're working on, and that's his purpose, right? And there are circumstances like that. Same with pro-life work. I've seen atrocious things done, not just because people don't care, but specifically to try and scare you off, make you be quiet. And we have to have the courage in a simple airplane flight to say something, because otherwise, when things really are important and even more dangerous and scary, we're not going to say anything at all. We're going to shy away. We're not going to stand up for our beliefs, and we're going to allow others to be harmed.
Right. Okay. And so I'm going to just really come after the it's all good culture, right? It's all good. I'm not one to judge. If he wants to look at porn, he can look at porn. No. Well, this is where that leads. Right. If we're not willing to stand up and say, no, there's right and there's wrong and this is wrong, then what you end up with is someone who's so empowered in wrong that they're doing this and forcing other people to be subject to it. And that's just not okay. I feel like we've trained people in this from middle school on. There's something that happens, and my kids are in middle school right now, so maybe I'm more sensitive to it. But I remember my own experience too. You take all these kids and you just kind of stop. You know, it's funny, we talk about helicopter parenting them, but there's certain things about teaching decency, right? And so, like, in the public schools now, kids, like the F word is just a common thing to say, right? And teachers feel powerless to do it. Our local school district just came out and said, you know what? We're just not doing dress code anymore, because which is too much of a hassle. So parents, just dress your kids or undress your kids or school however you want to.
Undress your kids. Go for it.
And again, what's the deal? So as parents now, what we have to do is enforce a social contract with our students and with our students' friends. And we have to be willing, you know, again, as people of faith and people of decency, I think we have to be willing to, when we pick kids up from school, if you see a little person dressed completely inappropriate, say, darling, you just need to put some clothes on.
So now they're little people, are they?
Middle schoolers, little people. Yeah. Yeah.
He's got a thing against short people today, apparently.
I am a heightist. I am a heightist.
You're a heightist.
I am.
Next thing at the intro of the show, he's going to be like, hey, shorty.
Exactly. We're changing the intro, you know, to actually list our heights, as it's saying.
Oh, that would be great.
Yep.
Getting it really incorrect here, but after all, it's trending. I mean, how much more incorrect can you do than talking about sex, abortion, marriage? Speaking of which, we have a lot lined up for the show. We're going to be talking about Planned Parenthood and the videos that have come out really the last week, talking about the cover-up of Planned Parenthood. Forget for a second Hollywood. Guess what? Who's been in bed for years with Hollywood? Planned Parenthood, because they've allowed and contributed to this sexual abuse and cover-up that we've seen. That being said, some final thoughts on how we can work on the issue of speaking up. How can we practice this in small ways?
Yeah, I think one, it starts in your family, you know, so you have those conversations. My son and I are just talking about this, how we have to talk about things that I never had to deal with because it's part of that reality. So it's equipping and preparing your family, your loved ones, so that when they're in a situation like this, they don't feel like they have no way to confront it.
You know, and giving the opportunity to talk about stories when you've been in a challenging circumstance and be equipped to say something.
Chris and Timmery will be right back. Tweet them at C Mueller Tweets, spelled M-U-E-L-L-E-R, and at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery.
So this past week, live action run by Lila Rose, who has been involved over the last about 8 or 9 years doing undercover sting operations inside the abortion clinics, basically exposing not only sexual abuse, that's actually how they started, sexual abuse where they're allowing for the abortion of minors and they're advising in how that is done. And not only minors, but minors who are under the influence of some form of prostitution, sexual assault from an adult. And now, you know, years later, looking forward, here we have this huge Me Too movement, Harvey Weinstein, and live action has come out and pointed to the fact that Planned Parenthood has been covering up sexual abuse for years. And even their own founder, Cecil Richards, speaks up saying this is something we see every day.
Yeah, I think if you're one of those people who's a Planned Parenthood defender, I think you just are closing your eyes to the reality. You know, and again, I had somebody posting about this the other day saying, oh, they do so much good. There's so much good works. I'm sorry. No, they really don't. Even if you are of a contracepting mindset, like you believe that, well, birth control is the great human good. And I'm not saying it is. I think it's an evil. I think it leads to these things. Arguing for the millions that have been murdered by Planned Parenthood, again, that's a great evil. But then seeing how Planned Parenthood's being used and aiding forced prostitution, aiding, you know, abuse, you know, because their interest is not in the health and well-being of the person that they're treating, right? It seems like their only interest is in just killing the life inside of that person, but not improving the condition of the person, right? Not saving the life of the young girl who's been forced into human trafficking, not saving the poor young person who's been abused by a stepfather or, you know, a family member. No, instead, they just want to kill the child in her womb and just send her right back into that situation of abuse. And it's horrific. It's unconscionable. And how can we continue to be funding Planned Parenthood as a nation? Like, as a nation, my tax money pays for this. And I know we just had the Title X funding, but it's a minuscule amount in what they receive from the federal government every year.
You know, Chris, I'm just looking at this and, you know, I'm still hot on the heels of just barely a week ago, Ireland, individual people voting to have abortion on demand there. And now here we are. And I'm looking at the fact that here's abortion on demand. It leads to sexual abuse cover-up. And I'm looking at these stories, and you guys, bear with me. I know a lot of people, when they see these live-action videos and the stories of what's happening in the abortion clinic, they think, even pro-lifers, even Catholics, even Christians who agree with our stance, think this is too much, and they shut down the conversation, and they don't listen. I've seen this for years, but you guys, you need to know this, because if you do not know it, you are not going to be equipped in these conversations to say, you know what, pro-lifers actually do stand for women's rights. So, I mean, here's just one story, Chris. My heart is breaking. And I'm going to throw this out there. I have tweeted and put these links to the videos up on my Facebook page as well. Please go and watch them. They're each just a handful of minutes. It won't be more than 15 minutes of your time. But there's one case, especially in the foster care system, where abortion is repeatedly used as cover-up for sexual abuse. In 2002, there's a documented case of a 12-year-old who was being abused by her 23-year-old foster brother. Well, you know what happened? It led to one abortion that was not reported on. And it led to a second abortion that was not reported on. This child continued to be abused by her foster brother for a number of years.
Mm. This is a foster child. This is a child who the state has said they can't be in their family context because it isn't safe. And so ideally, in a foster situation, they're being put in a context that's more safe, a home that can love them in a way their parents were not capable of doing at that point. And instead, we see that they're being abused, that they're being sexually assaulted, because in a situation of a 23-year-old and a 12-year-old, it's assault. And the child, they're being forced to murder the child in their womb repeatedly to cover that up so that they can continue to stay in that situation. I mean, the gross failure on the part of so many people, but Planned Parenthood just aiding and abetting.
You know, I'm a mandated reporter, and ordered to work within the Catholic Church. You are as well.
I am as well.
Chris. So if we see any sign of sexual abuse, and we've been taught how to identify signs of sexual abuse, we've been to hours worth of conferences.
Hours and hours.
And we have to keep up that training and education in order to work with young people. And, you know, so do high school teachers. So do middle school teachers. So do, guess what? Planned Parenthood employees. They're mandated reporters. So if I even suspect sexual abuse, I'm required to report that. But what's come out basically is there are a number of abortion clinic workers who worked in Planned Parenthood for years who have not been reporting this. So let's just look at California, for instance. California, did you know that it's actually illegal to have a sexual interaction between anyone under the age of 18? Not only that, it has to be consensual. So the level of punishment changes.
Two people under 18 would be illegal?
Yes.
Wow, I wasn't
aware
of that.
Two people under 18 is illegal. Now, if there's less than a 3-year difference, the level of punishment, such as a felony, can be reduced to a misdemeanor.
Right.
So if that's less than 3 years, and of course, if it's consensual. So actually, you know, underage sex really shouldn't be happening. I'm not going to get into that conversation. It is happening. We could do more about it, especially when we see a big age gap. We should, to begin with, since we recognize that sex before marriage is not healthy for a person, especially repeated sex with multiple partners, STDs, risk of abortion, STD. Like, we could go on, Chris.
Oh, yeah.
Yet we're not reporting that. But in these cases, they're not even talking about cases of underage sexual interaction. We're talking about underage sexual interaction with people bringing a young child in. For example, 2004, Ohio, a soccer coach pretended to be a stepbrother and brought the child in. 2012, abortion took place on a 13-year-old being abused. You know, I could go on and on. There's one case where the father was abusing the daughter, and she had an abortion at the age of 14, 16, and 17. Not once was it reported to Planned Parenthood.
I mean, it just seems to me like if we're dealing with children, and I'm just going to throw it arbitrarily, under 13 or under 14, shouldn't there be a statute that says that's an automatic CPS case? That's automatically Child Protective Services needs to look into it, because you've got a child who's clearly in a situation that's going to affect their long-term outcomes, right? And we need to understand, is this an adult? Is this a situation where you've got two minors who now that we need an intervention to kind of help them long-term? But this is clearly a problem, right? So statutorily, it should say, if we have a situation like this, somebody needs to get involved. We need to find out what's happening.
Well, and that is the law in most cases. For example, Pennsylvania, California, if they're underneath the age of 13, you have to report that sexual abuse.
Right. Okay. But not even. Okay. So let me say, I want to clarify. If they believe that this is a 13-year-old with a 13-year-old.
Still has to report it. Under the age of 13, you have to report that. You are a mandated reporter. And here's the deal. There are a lot of children, and they are children, going into Planned Parenthood having abortions, and no one is reporting that. And these abortion clinic workers who have left that Planned Parenthood business have come out saying, well, there are moments where I had all the details, I was going to report it, and I was advised not to. I was told there would be punishment if I went forward with reporting it. Story after story of abortion clinic workers, managers, directors saying they were told not to report.
Right. That just shows that they're not training their employees in what it means to be a mandated reporter either, because you don't ask permission as a mandated reporter. In fact, you don't have the right to ask permission. You have to report it because you're the mandated reporter.
Well, and here's the other thing. They had a person specifically within the Planned Parenthood Network who had the responsibility of training on Title X funding and what you had to do to maintain that, and some of which what they had to do was train on mandated reporting. If you see X, you need to report it right away. Well, what happened is the person who was educating on the fact that you had to report in the Title X requirements basically saw that outright those managers and workers within Planned Parenthood laughed at her and vocally said they would not report these instances, even though she's telling them you are legally bound to. This is what you're meant to do. This is policy.
Right. And so the question then becomes, this has come to light so many times, Planned Parenthood has been caught breaking the law. When are we going to start to see some sort of action on that? When are we going to start to see the government prosecute people who are breaking the law? When are we going to start to see the government prosecuting people who are aiding and abetting abusers? When is that going to happen? Because it seems like, I don't know why, Planned Parenthood has protected status where nothing sticks, right? They can be selling human beings parts on the market, and the government goes, oh, well, that's ridiculous. And here in California, we penalize the people who did the investigation as opposed to actually penalizing the criminals. Or they're aiding and abetting molesters. And so, oh, no, they're just, we can't do anything. We just need to give them more training or something, right? No, you need to be tried because you broke the law. You failed in your role as someone who was set there to protect children.
Well, and isn't that what Planned Parenthood is in the business of? We care about women, yet they are essentially creating a business model to allow for that business model of sexual abuse, prostitution, of sex trafficking rings to continue. And that's what Live Action has exposed over and over again. One of the stories, Chris, that absolutely just pulled at my heart, and I have seen this going in sidewalk counseling before, where a woman comes in and she doesn't speak English. This woman was from Somalia. She came in with what were allegedly her husband, her brother-in-law, and then a friend who slightly spoke broken English. None of them otherwise spoke English. Essentially, the girl looked afraid. She wasn't making eye contact. She was looking down. And what happened is, essentially, one of the workers knew. She goes, this girl is being forced into something. Something's going on here. So she goes to the manager. And the manager is essentially annoyed. And so goes out and looks at the friend who speaks broken English and says, can you get her to say that this is what she wants? Not, is this what she wants? Can you get her to say that? And he talks to her. We don't know what he said to her because they're speaking in a different language. He speaks to her and she vaguely nods her head. And basically the manager says, that is enough.
Wow.
This is the blatant cover-up of abuse to women, and why Planned Parenthood isn't speaking up against this within their organization is unfathomable to me.
How can you defend this?
I can't understand it. Well, and a friend of mine, Ramona Trevino, she actually worked as a manager in Planned Parenthood, and she's left and she's in the pro-life movement and she is speaking up for the cause and what she has seen. But she talks about how when those undercover videos started to come out, she ended up going to some of the trainings for Planned Parenthood, and she kept asking them, where's the training for us to be better at reporting abuse? And I'm going to bring this back in, talking about what they said to her at Planned Parenthood and how they said, basically, yeah, you don't have to report it. We're not doing any training. We'll be back in just a minute on Trending, talking more about Planned Parenthood.
You can listen to more of Trending via the podcast on iTunes or the iHeartRadio app, where you can share your favorite episodes. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
We're talking about Planned Parenthood and the sexual abuse cover-up that they have been involved in for years. It's part of their business model. They say that they see this every day, and they're not willing to change their policies and procedures. So in talking about what's happening at Planned Parenthood, I have a friend of mine who actually was interviewed on one of these videos, and Ramona Trevino, she was a manager within Planned Parenthood, and she saw that when the exposure of what was happening undercover of sexual abuse was coming out in the videos, she came back and said, well, how are we going to cover this up? She said, how are we going to cover this up? How are we going to report this? How are we going to address clearly the sexual abuse that's entering into our facilities that we're allowing to get past us? And they just laughed at her. They're not going to train or educate on that. Their procedures are not going to change at all. What's going to happen is we're going to teach you how to identify whether or not you are being recorded on camera.
Wow.
And Chris, you know, I look at this and she herself, the red flag started going up more and more working within that context to see they don't care about women. I thought they did, but they're not even willing to speak up when sexual abuse is taking place of minors.
Yeah, I go back to this. How do you defend this? If you're one of those Planned Parenthood defenders, like, oh no, they're not about abortion. It's about so much more than abortion. How do you defend this? You could also say the Nazis were really into freeways, right? They were not just about killing Jews. They were really into freeways and making government work really well and providing services to the German people. But yeah, they also killed 6 million Jews. Not a big deal. No, a very big deal. And you define the Nazis by they killed 6 million Jews. It's insane to define Planned Parenthood by, oh, they do so many other wonderful things.
You know, I don't get this argument. I hear over and over again, even among people who are pro-life, but have allowed themselves to become distracted thinking that Planned Parenthood does good things. Did you know that there are tons of health clinics for women that don't perform abortions that women can go to for free, just like they could to a Planned Parenthood? But again, did I mention they don't kill innocent children and they don't destroy a woman's life by performing an abortion on her? Do you know that? Because there are. And people say, well, if we defund Planned Parenthood, if we remove more funding, there will be nowhere for them to go. Guess what? We have defunded Planned Parenthood more and more. There's more work to be done, as Chris talked about. However, we still have to do more, and we still have to make sure people know there are other public health clinics for women.
Well, yeah. And so what's to stop an independent network of health clinics for women from popping up? If you take that money out of Planned Parenthood and you make it available to other people, guess what? Other people will find ways to provide services, right? Non-abortion providers will find ways to provide services. And so rather than having this massive, you know, abortion mill bureaucracy, now you've got independent, you know, health centers that are local, that understand what's happening in communities, that can reach people in communities more effectively.
There's great news in our ability to do more work for life. You guys, knowing this information makes a difference when you see people in a crisis situation, or maybe people in an environment where abortion's a norm, and you can help them to understand what's taking place in the abortion clinic, that Planned Parenthood does not care about women. They have betrayed women. And the more we can do this, the more the public opinion, the public favor of Planned Parenthood will decline. And it has over the years. So you guys, please head on over to my Facebook and Twitter page and share these links of the video so that other people can become informed. And say what you have to say when you share the video. Don't just share the video, comment. This is what's happening, because maybe they won't watch it, but they can see at least what you had to say.
Yep, absolutely.
So now I want to talk about some good news, but also more to come in the battle for religious liberty. This past week, the cake shop in Colorado, Jack Phillips, who was asked essentially to make a custom cake for a couple celebrating their marriage to each other. I put air quotation marks on marriage. Jack Phillips was more than happy to sell them a cake, but he was not going to make a custom cake for them. This is what then turned into a huge court battle, and essentially it went all the way to the Supreme Court this past week.
Right, and the court came out in a somewhat narrow decision and said that the Colorado Commission had basically acted unfairly towards the baker. So a huge victory. The baker doesn't have to make the cake. However, what they did is they, in a lot of respects, they punted the issue. They said, in this specific thing, we're going to blame the commission because they made some anti-religion comments and commentary, and we think that he was unfairly dealt with. But then they punted the bigger question of, what about other bakers? What about other photographers? Are they then required to participate in a quote unquote gay marriage?
So essentially, Colorado Civil Rights Commission has made it clear that not only is the idea of marriage between one man and one woman out of step with the times, not only are they hateful, like all of these ideas that essentially made it very clear that they are anti-religion, anti-Christianity. That's why this case is being pushed away, punted, as Chris put it, not because this man shouldn't be forced to make a custom cake. And that's where it's really disappointing, because if you get into the nitty-gritty of it, he was more than willing to provide a service to any person. He wasn't willing to take his artistry and create a celebration of something he radically disagreed with.
Right, I think there's something to be said for that. Like, he didn't say, no, you can't ever eat my cupcakes. There wasn't a big sign on the store that said, no gays allowed. He said, I'll give you, hey, take any cake in the shop. I'll make you a generic cake. You can use it for whatever you want to make it for. Mm-hmm. I'm just not making a custom cake because I'm not participating in something that I don't believe, that I believe, you know, violates my religious beliefs.
And that's a really important point, because in a lot of the pieces that I've seen coming out since the Supreme Court decision was made yesterday, a lot of people are not reporting on the fact that he was more than willing to sell a cake. You guys, as Christians, this is a fantastic example of loving a person, seeing them where they're at, offering a service to them, having a conversation with them, but not participating in their lifestyle. He was willing to go only so far, and so far as was moral.
Right. And this is where I think that the hyperbole in our modern conversation really is a problem, right? Like, it's how to argue unfairly. Well, the guy says, no, I just won't make a wedding cake. And they're like, well, this, you want to go back to segregation and private and different, you know, water fountains for different people. And you want a big no gay sign. And it's hyperbole. It's not actually the facts of the case. He didn't treat them unfairly. He didn't treat them badly. He just said, I can't participate in X. But mm-hmm. But anything else, I'm happy to be, you know. Didn't say get out of my store. He didn't go, ugh, I don't want you here.
So you know? the hope was that with this Supreme Court ruling, it would set the precedence that cake shops, photographers can't be forced to participate in the celebration of something they disagree with, right? And that's what it came down to. And so essentially the court punted this, as Chris put it, avoided actually answering that question. They just said, in this case, Colorado Civil Rights Commission behaved anti-Christian. Moving on. However, what I want to talk a little bit about is, you know, I personally have tons of family members, and I shouldn't say tons, I have a handful of family members and a handful of friends who experience same-sex attraction and have lived a gay lifestyle and had partners at times that have been exposed to our family. And this is the opportunity to have a conversation where we have to remember, first and foremost, these are human beings. It is Jackie. It is Susan. It is Mark. It is individuals who we would treat like anyone else. When there is an issue is when we're being asked to participate in their lifestyle. That's when we have to speak up and say something. But at the end of the day, we have to stop reducing individuals to their sexual desire and say, that gay person. No, it's someone who's experiencing same-sex attraction, and that person is my friend. That person is my family member.
Right. Absolutely. Again, you know, like, would you make him a birthday cake? Yeah. Why? Because everybody's got birthdays. I love birthdays. We're celebrating birthdays. Why? Because we're celebrating your life. Why? Because we're celebrating you. Right. But would you make a murder cake? You know, hey, you're just convicted of murder. Way to go. You know, no, you wouldn't make a murder cake. Why? Because murder's wrong and you don't agree with murder. Here's your abortion cake. No, I'm not going to make that. Why? Because I believe it's wrong. It inherently damages you and kills your infant. Here's your gay marriage cake. No, why? Not because I hate you, because I think this is something that's going to ultimately damage and hurt you, right? Because I think it's wrong.
You, your soul, your body. I mean, we're not even talking about the higher level of STDs and AIDS that take place within the bisexual or homosexual community, because guess what? The body parts aren't made to work that way. And every government website talking about sexuality and the harms of it talked about that. Because guess what? That area, specifically on your backside, is not meant to engage in oral or physical contact in that way. And so guess what? It's more susceptible to sexually transmitted diseases. A lot of people don't realize or know this, yet this is the reality. And I care not only about your body, not only about your soul, not only about your daily interaction, I care about the people you're interacting with too. And so, you know, remembering we don't just reduce who they are to that sexual desire, we uplift and affirm who they are as a person. not their sexual desire.
Right. And, you know, I think getting back to that, that's exactly right. You know, and I think this is where we lose a lot of credibility, honestly, is when the perception of Christians isn't one of love, right? When the perceptions of Christians isn't Christ, then we lose credibility when we say, well, we this isn't really about, it's about truth, it's about love, it's about we love you, we want the best for you. But if we don't exhibit that in the way we treat every individual. So, you know, if you have someone in your life or you encounter at the store and they're, you know, I would say stereotypically, you know, exhibiting, you know, that maybe that person's gay, and you treat them differently because of it, and you don't treat them like you've just encountered Christ, then you've missed something, right? Like every person we encounter, whether they come off flamboyant or whatever, or trans or whatever, the reality is you've just encountered Christ. Whatsoever you do for the least of these, that you do for me. And so we as Christians need to be challenged. People who are living lifestyles we don't agree with, we can't blanket say, oh, I'm okay with that. But we can never say that I hate that person. We can never say anything, but I want to see and serve and love Christ in that person.
You know, there's this man at the grocery store that I've been seeing for years. And every time I go up, he, you know, it breaks my heart. I've seen he's clearly fallen more so into the appearance of someone who I'm not sure if he's identifying as transgender or if he's just wearing more makeup and growing his hair. But the way he's talking has changed over the years. And I see him quite often at the grocery store. And I've always talked to him, looked him in the eye, worked to have a conversation. And, you know, no matter how far that goes, I can never ignore the fact that he's a person that I would say hello to and love in that way by talking to, just like any other person. I shouldn't suddenly avoid eye contact because he looks different, right? I shouldn't suddenly look down the entire time and not speak. We have this responsibility to love, interact, and joyfully share about our lives without even necessarily every time having to talk about that specific topic.
Chris and Timmery will be right back. Tweet them at C Mueller Tweets, spelled M-U-E-L-L-E-R, and at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery.
So I'm really excited, Chris. Do you know what happened this week?
No.
For the first time, I actually won something.
You won something?
I won something.
That's fantastic.
So for those who aren't following her, you've got to get out there and follow her. Swiss Guard Wife. Joanne's a good friend, social media-wise. I've interacted with her back and forth. We have some priest friends in common, and she is married to a Swiss Guard, which is extremely rare.
I remember when that story came out. That was great.
Yeah. So she and I will interact back and forth a little bit here and there. I'm actually hoping to bring her on as a guest this summer. Won't be live, but we will see what happens. But she actually went to Lord's recently and brought back a number of things, and she ended up doing a giveaway, and she gave away a bunch of stuff that she brought back and had blessed at Lord's, had blessed by the Swiss Guard chaplain, and has been there at the Vatican with her. And I won part of the giveaway.
What was it?
I was so excited. She has some holy items from Lord's. I was a runner-up, so I wasn't number one with the awesome rosaries and so forth that she got. So I mean, can't wait to see the little goodies that I've got coming from Lord's and from the Swiss Guard Chapel from her.
Oh, cool.
I was so excited, though. So if you haven't already, go and follow her. She does tours, actually, of the Vatican Gardens, small tours if you're ever there in Rome as well.
It's funny that she's married to a Vatican guard and she gives tours of the gardens.
But I'm pumped.
The dad inside of me had to. I had no choice. I was compelled.
Good dad joke.
I do what I can.
Oh man, but I was very excited. I'm like, I won. I've never won anything. I was like tagging all my sisters and texting them. We're like, we know Timmery. We saw you tagged us already.
You know, my wife is lucky. She wins things. Like when we were engaged, she won the Showcase Showdown on The Price is Right. And it actually paid for part of her honeymoon and her wedding rings and stuff. And I got lucky because I won her. So there you go. She's pretty much, I spent it all right there. All of the luck done at that moment.
My mom wins a lot of things too, though. I don't know how she does it. She wins all the time, which is a good thing because she loves winning. She gets so excited. I remember she won one of those karaoke like roll along things, and my little sister a couple summers ago got that mic and just sang for hours. Mm. My brother was so jealous that she wouldn't give up the mic to him.
Wow. Yeah, karaoke. We've had that enter our homes at times. Yeah, I'm not going to comment any further.
I'm not a good singer. You are, though.
I dabble.
You dabble.
I dabble. Yeah.
You dabble. Well, really neat thing this week. This article came out about a young man who just graduated high school.
Yeah, this was a great story. So apparently when this young man was coming into the world, getting ready to be born, his mom and his dad did not make it to the, or his dad got pulled over for speeding, right? And he said, my wife's in labor. And so he was actually delivered by a cop on the side of the road.
I just think that's so neat. So this cop, essentially, they ended up staying in contact. They've exchanged Christmas cards over the years. Unfortunately, I don't know the circumstances, but the father of this young man died over the last year. And so, much to everyone's surprise, he's at his graduation, and lo and behold, his now, what would you say, deliverer? I don't know what you call him. This former officer, I think he's still an officer on the force, but this officer ends up showing up as a surprise at the graduation, and the young man recognized him from the photos.
Yeah, I mean, how cool is that? So good for this police officer to know and to be aware of this kid's life, to have kind of followed it, to know that his dad has passed away, and to really step in to try to be a father figure, you know, at that moment of need. I mean, just really, what a great story.
You know, it's such a joy to see these moments where we're doing everything we can to fight for the life of an unborn child. And in this case, here's a soldier. And essentially what happened is he sees someone in need and he comes out and he helps by delivering this baby. And I love to hear the stories of firefighters and police officers where they talk about some of the most joyful moments are when they have, in the midst of a crisis, the opportunity to deliver that baby.
Yeah. You know, what's neat is this kid's middle name is actually Robert after the officer who delivered him. His parents thought that was, they're so touched and they're so grateful for this man. And so to have him show up then later is, you know, it's neat. And I think, you know, our police officers, our firefighters, you know, they don't always get a lot of great credit. There's been a lot of negative news about police officers in recent months and years. And we have to remember that, you know, the majority of these guys are guys who joined to serve. They're guys who really deeply care about their community, who really deeply care about their state. And they said, how can I live my life in a way that serves my fellow man? And they're putting themselves out there on the line for us and for our safety, for our communities, you know, time and time again. Their wives are at home, and when their husband's coming home late, they're wondering why. What happened? You know, is it, were they hurt in a fire? Were they hurt in a shooting? What was that? Whenever, you know, I've got police officer friends, and whenever there's something that happens where there's an officer who's been shot, they don't immediately say who it was. Mm-hmm. And I know wives who it's a terrifying moment until they find out or get the phone call from their husband or their spouse saying, I'm okay.
Mm-hmm. You know? One of my dear cousins, her husband has been, you know, working within the sheriff department for years, and he's gone all the time, and you'll hear stories about the things he's done, and it's amazing. But at the same time, I always forget she's on the receiving end of that, those moments of waiting and fear. And I always just admire how she's calm. She's not worried. She's patient. She waits, and the level of strength she has at the same time as he.
Yeah. So if you are a firefighter or police officer, I just want you to hear us saying thank you. I mean, thank you for the service that you give, and thank you for putting your life on the line like that. And again, I think there is a witness of Christ in that. I think that choice to say that I'm going to offer my life so that other people can have the safety that they enjoy, there's a witness of Christ in that, or there can be if you choose to offer your life in that way.
Well, I think that this is one of those careers too. We've been talking a lot about careers over the last couple of months as graduations are taking place. People have just graduated high school, college, are discerning what to do next. I know a lot of people who have this desire to serve, and that can take shape in many different ways, but one of those is to serve not just in military public service, but as a firefighter, as a sheriff, as a police officer. I think that is a very honorable thing to do. And that is the reason why a lot of them have chosen to do it, like you said, Chris. And so when we're sitting here criticizing the police for all of the different things we have over the years, we have to remember at the end of the day, they're protecting people in the worst of circumstances, day in and day out, putting themselves in danger.
Right. You know, and you look at some of the horrible things that have happened over the years. I'm not going to speak up and defend, you know, the situations where we've seen abuse, but I can tell you, I have a lot of law enforcement officers in my life, people from church, people I know. You know, I can think of one Corps member who was just he joined our team at 19. He was helping with youth ministry, and he is such a good young man. And we used to kind of joke around, like, you know, he's Vice Dad. Like, he was a guy who was going to grow up and just be a fantastic father someday. And he went on, he joined the local sheriffs, and now he's out in patrol. And I just think, you know, more often than not, I meet the cops I meet are guys like that. They're guys who are just, they were epic in their service at church and community, and they're living it out that way. You know, and so, absolutely. Really, really think this is a great thing to get into if you're looking for that job where you can get out right away and get to work. When you see those police officers out there, I think we need to stop seeing them as people who are keeping us constrained. As people are saying, they're making our freedoms possible, because when society breaks down, you don't have the freedoms to just go out and walk to the store or to do those things or live in a safe place.
Well, and it's funny, I was thinking about this the last couple weeks. I used to always get really, really nervous driving in the mountains because there's one lane on either side. And so if you have a police officer or a sheriff behind you, you are stuck with them behind you for a very long time unless you pull over. So it's always this mindset, do I pull over because I'm guilty, or do I pull over to let them pass? Are they going to find a reason to pull you over?
Right.
Well, to this day, I'm always terrified when I see that police officer on the road. And finally, especially the last couple of weeks, I've been thinking, no, they're here to serve us. They're here to protect us. Unless I'm breaking the law, I have nothing to worry about. Drive on.
You know, I got a ticket a couple years ago, and I'd gotten two. One was for something silly. Anyway, I lost my California good driver's privilege, which my insurance went up like a lot at that point. And so at that point, I decided, you know what? I'm just not speeding anymore. I'm just not going to do it. And so typically,
is that what happened?
I think that time, well, one, I'd driven through a crosswalk, and there was someone in the crosswalk on the other side. So I got a ticket for that. And then I was speeding the second time. But you know what's interesting? I don't speed anymore. It sounds silly, but I don't. I just set my cruise control, and I typically just go whatever the speed limit is. And so when I see a cop, I don't get freaked out, because I don't think I'm trying to get away with anything, right? Like, I'm just driving my car, you know? And there have been times where I see a police officer come up behind me with his lights on. I go, oh boy, maybe did I forget to put my sticker on? Did I forget to put that, you know? I got pulled over a couple years ago. I was speeding ticket in an area I didn't know I was speeding, because the cop said, oh, you're speeding through town. I was out in the like rural areas. I'm like, what town? There's no town here. How could I get, you know? But again, you know, I just, you act respectfully, and it was not a horrible situation. I most of the time, if I'm not trying to get away with something, I got no fear of the cop who's pulling up behind me.
There's this quote from Proverbs chapter 10 that I always like to bring up when we're talking about chastity. And it is, he who walks in integrity walks securely, but he who perverts his ways will be found out. And it always makes me think of those moments, depending on how we live our lifestyle, will determine whether or not we're walking in fear, we're walking afraid that someone's going to find out we have premarital sex, that we're on contraception because we're having premarital sex, that we might have to have an abortion because that's what could come from premarital sex. Or say you show up home late past curfew, right? You're worried they're going to hear you getting home, right? You're worried then the next morning you're avoiding eye contact because they might ask you what time you got home. But if you live a lifestyle that is above reproach,
right?
That is honest, that recognizes, okay, yes, I made a mistake, but address it, move on. You're not going to be worried all the time about being found out, essentially.
Oh, absolutely. You know, you talk about spiritual attack, and you know, the catechism tells us all of man's life is a battle. Well, when you're living your life with kind of secrets or trying to get away with things or all that, what happens is you get those whispers of, well, that person's judging me, or that person's no. I can't tell you how many times I've had kids in my office at the church, and they said, I could tell you didn't like me. I'm like, I don't even know you. We have a 400 kid in the program.
I don't remember your name.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have time to not like you. I mean, there's a group of 400 kids in the room at that point. Right. And I say, I want to get to know you, but I don't. So I don't know what's going on with you that you think I don't like you at the outset. What's happening in your life that you think I wouldn't approve of or would judge you for? And it's amazing the conversations that come out. We've seen kids' lives change because of that, right? Because we dealt with the, well, where's the devil been attacking you? And oftentimes it's in those things you know you shouldn't be doing, but you're doing anyway. And now you're living with the weight of that on you, right? And so then you start to assume it's everybody against me. It changes everything.
Well, it isn't part of that desire. You don't like me. They're assuming you don't like me. Maybe it's that they're doing something wrong, or it's that they really want you and need you, and they feel like they're not getting what they need in that moment, too. They're like saying, I want more of your attention. I think that kids do this a lot to their parents. They're mad at their parents because parents aren't jumping in. But here we talk about this on Trending, more about parenting, more about standing up and speaking up for what's right.
This has been Trending with Chris and Timmery. To learn more about Chris Mueller or Timmery Millington, or to book either of them to speak at your upcoming event, visit everydaycatholic.com or timmery.com.